Architecture Talks, the podcast about architecture from Jung.
The important thing is that you can connect with the brain of other people, and this connection can be very fruitful.
Architecture is a public concern. Every 2 years, architects turn their attention to Barcelona. This is because it is here inside the German Pavilion, designed by Ludwig Mies van der Rohe and Lili Reich for the 1929 Barcelona International Exposition, that the European Union Prize for Contemporary Architecture, also called Mies van der Rohe Prize, is awarded. The prize is considered Europe's most important award for groundbreaking architecture. It is therefore both a seismograph of future developments and a snapshot of the diversity of the current construction tasks. Established offices compete alongside young, up-and-coming architects with entries selected in a multi-stage interdisciplinary selection process. The focus of the competition is on the cultural role of architecture in the construction of our towns and cities, and prize winners receive confirmation from the professional world while being provided with a springboard with which to reach a broader public. Since 2016, architect Ana Ramos has been the director of the Fundación Mies van der Rohe. In our podcast today, we, Diane Slavic and Eva Herrmann, talk to Ana Ramos about the balancing act of fulfilling the public mission for the goals set by the Fundación and, at the same time, developing new formats and themes for the architectural discourse.
Hello and a very warm welcome to our Jung Architecture Talk podcast. Nice to have you with us.
Thank you for having me, ladies.
So let's start with the good news, which are not on our asking list. You're smiling the whole time. So why are you so happy?
I'm very happy because we just knew yesterday that Barcelona has been proclaimed the World Capital for Architecture by UNESCO in 2026. We will be hosting the World UIA Congress of Architecture, and all year long we will be offering hundreds of exhibitions and events and debates about architecture. So we are really, really happy to do this again.
Congratulations on this. And to all our listeners, save the date. It will be like focusing on July 2026. The second phase for the works nominated for the Mies Award will begin in September 2021. With the winners announced in April 2022. An exciting time for you and the jurors, therefore. Why is it important to have this European prize?
That's a very good question. Why is it important to have architecture prizes? Or why is it important to have prizes at all? We have to keep in mind the reasons why we do things. A prize, an award, of course, it's the opportunity for someone to be awarded, which is always great because behind every work of architecture, there are 5-10 years of work and hundreds of people involved and lots of resources. And it's always nice that someone recognizes your work, especially when it's a serious award, like the EU Mies Award, made by a panel of very prestigious architects and critics and writers. But for society in general, the importance of the awards is to open a conversation, to highlight the importance of this building or this other building. It's not relevant because of the form of the building. It's not relevant because of a special technique that the building is used, but it's important because it's shaping the city, it's shaping the streets, and it's shaping the way we live in the spaces. So awards and prizes are an opportunity to start a conversation with our fellow citizens about the kind of spaces they like to live in, or about the kind of future they want to create. So that's the most important thing for the awards, to remember that it's the opportunity to highlight a way of working and to open a conversation with the general society, with politicians, with clients, and with fellow architects, of course.
The Fundación is a public institution, part of Creative Europe. What would you say? How important is it for your work to be that independent?
Well, I have to make some point. The Fundación is a public institution funded by the Barcelona City Council and the Catalan and Spanish governments. And the EUMIES Award is funded partly on our resources and partly on the European Union through the Creative Europe program. Still being under all this umbrella of institutions, we are proudly independent because sometimes because architecture is a bit on the edge of the mainstream of a politician debate on the daily basis. And also because we have proved throughout more than 30 years that we keep loyal to architecture itself and not, you know, political changes or movements. We do pay very much attention to really what is happening in the ground, what is happening amongst, in the minds of our fellow architects, and what is happening in the real environment. We try very hard and we do manage to be a very independent institution.
So take us behind the scenes for a moment. We know the competition process is complex. And how do you choose the nominated works? And who or which professions choose the winners? How does it work?
We don't nominate, but we choose the nominators. There are 40 countries, more or less, in Europe that can participate in the award. Each of those countries has at least one national order of architects. So each of those national order of architects are nominating. But not only them, because they are, let's say, the official nominators. But then we have independent nominators, up to 90 persons in these 40 countries, which are asked to nominate 5 works each. And at least 3 of the works have to be from their own region, but they can nominate up to 2 works which are not in their own region, which provides us with transnational nominations, which is super interesting because sometimes these transnational nominatings are really outside of the mainstream of the local scene, and they help popping up unknown works or less known architects in their own local communities. So we have the official nominations and the independent nominations. And to all of them, we ask to nominate works that they know in person, that they could have the opportunity to visit, and they should have some knowledge of the story of that work, because they all produce short texts which will be later used by the jurors. So it's this small introduction just stating why is that work relevant in their opinion. So all together with that, we have this long list of fans on the edition, because it might happen that there are overlappings from the nominations of different experts or different national associations with the experts. But we might have these, whatever, 400 projects, to say a number. And then the nominators don't show in the story anymore. And then the jurors step in. So the jurors can only judge on previously nominated works. So that brings a double security system, let's say, which is part of the independence of the award. And we don't have a say. Our say is to choose the jurors and to choose the independent experts, which more or less change. 1/3 of the independent experts change in every edition. Of course, their work is super important. You know, without a good nomination, we cannot have, you know, a good award.
Absolutely. We are witnessing a transformation from star architecture to social political themes. And if we have a look at La Carton Vassal, for example, who just have been awarded the Pritzker Prize, how do you think the perception of architecture has changed?
I think the change is in the perception, as you say, but not in the architecture itself. We have always had architects dealing with a social transformation, with ecology since a long time, with housing, with renovation. That has always been an issue in architecture. But the change is in the public media issue. And that is a lucky change because that changes the focus of the conversation I was referring to before. Because if we focus only in the form of a building or in the name of one person who is the author of that building, the conversation becomes less interesting to less people. But if we focus on the function of the building and we compare it with daily life of the people who's living there, then becomes more interesting to more people. And that makes the work of architects more relevant to society, because it is very relevant, but maybe sometimes we cannot explain why is it that relevant. The more people is aware on how important is the beauty and the quality of the spaces they live in, the more they will demand good architecture and not only flashy things for inaugurations.
The Fundación Mies van der Rohe not only awards this prize, it also engages in a wide range of activities to increase public awareness of the role of architecture and also architects, including research and events, exhibitions, and artistic interventions. What are you working on right now?
Well, right now we are precisely working on this candidacy to the World Capital of Architecture, of course, but that's on the long term, 5 years from now. We are only working on the new European Bauhaus project, in which we are partners and which we fully support. And again, we hope it's for the best in Europe and all over. We love the fact that beauty is on the stage again, but without complex, like beauty and sustainability and social inclusion. All together, that's possible. And that's the role of designers and architects. So thank you for asking, Europe. But to be more precise, we're very focused now on the preparation of our events related to the Young Talent Architecture Award at the end of September in the Venice Biennale, where we are having a collateral event, an exhibition all summer long until November. And we are also preparing some of our next artistic interventions in the Barcelona Pavilion. Most namely, we will be hosting a transformation of the Barcelona Pavilion into one of the winter gardens of La Carton Vassal Hutin-Drouot project in Bordeaux. You know, we like to transform the space of the pavilion to enhance new views and new thoughts. And this will be a very special project in November. It will be late November, early December in Barcelona. So you are all invited to come and see.
Thank you. So now we talk what you are now working right on, but how can we as the society, raise public awareness of the role of architecture? What would make the profession even more attractive to more people?
I think we need to be very honest when we talk about our profession. We have to talk about money. We have to talk about the complex of the building process of an architecture work, about the industrial production of construction materials, about availability of some materials in some places, you know, the daily tasks which are in the architecture offices and that sometimes are not explained, and we focus on the artistic part of the job, which is also important, but is not shared by that much layers of the society. So I think we have to be very humble and honest, because our profession is important, but same like all other professions are important. Also, we need to talk much more about the role we do together with others in our daily life, because building is not possible because of one person, but many people in many offices or industries. So it's very important that we are open to share the success of good pieces of architecture. And also we have to be open to criticize the things that are not correct. Do not be corporativists.
You already mentioned it, the Young Talent Architecture Award, which will be awarded on September 28th in Venice. So that's actually another direction you're going to, like including the young architects. So these kind of awards also serve as a launchpad for young offices, but also for students. So besides the awarding the Emerging Architecture Prize as part of the Mies van der Rohe Award, you started to support students with the Young Talent Architecture Award. Would you say, like, does the current generation of architecture students differ from previous ones, like maybe from our generation?
You made me think of that song, every generation blames the one before, but it's absolutely right. Yeah. So every generation is always the same and is always different. The Young Talent Architecture Award was created as an inherent part of the UMIES award, but trying to focus on the near future. Because when we award diploma projects, the gain we society are getting is get to know what's in the mind of these young creators. And therefore, what will be the next to happen? Because we have to pay very much attention to what young generation is thinking or talking about, because in 10 years time, they will be ruling the world. And maybe we can help them, because we already passed through some moments in our life that we were maybe wanting to do the same that they are now wanting to do. And maybe we can provide some help from our point of view, while at the same time, they remind us who we were like 30 years ago.
We're not that old.
We're not that old, but, or yes, doesn't matter the age you have. The important thing is that you can connect with the brain of other people. And there are moments when this connection can be very fruitful. There's always a genealogy, and you always have to recognize who your masters were and the masters of your masters. And there's a line which goes through generations, and that has to be recognized. Nobody, you know, starts something from zero. We all learn from someone, and we can all teach someone. So this connection with the younger generation through the YTAA award and putting them in contact with the winners of the UMIES award and with the emerging architects, that creates a community. That's our aim here. What we see in the young generation of architects, they are super interested in nature, in the processes of nature, in ecosystems, in metabolisms, in understanding how the nature works, and understanding that we humans are part of that metabolism of nature, and we are part of the ecosystem. In our cities are our ecosystems, and we see them very much willing to connect with their natural side. And that's probably a difference. If we go back, I don't know, to the 90s, we come with this perception of super powerful society. We humans can make everything, and we are the masters of the world. And then that means that we are destroying the world and destroying ourselves. So we had many crises showing us. We have climate crisis, but we had economic crisis, and we have now had a health crisis. So luckily, these young people, which are smarter than we are, because they can learn more rapidly than we can, they are adapting and reacting to that situation. And that's super inspiring.
I can imagine. I have one additional question. You started with a European awarding from the YTAA, and last year, I guess, you started to extend it also to the Asian universities. So do you see any difference in their design thinking, in their work?
Well, we precisely opened up the award to see what could we learn from each other and what are the cross learnings or differences. Probably we see much more worries about these ecosystems and metabolisms in European students, and especially very much in this learning by doing, which we see in Europe and we see it everywhere, I would say, because we have some examples. We did something with Asia, but now in this edition, we also have some American schools invited, Latin American schools invited. And in three continents, we see examples of diploma works that have become real things or built things. So that's something they all share. But maybe this focus on the process, the logistical process of production, functioning, treating the construction sector like part of the natural ecosystems, we see it more in European schools, maybe. But it's super inspiring to look at other cultures in an equal terms, you know, like now you show me with your millennial culture, you know, either from Incas or either from China or from India, you know, we all have to learn so much from each other.
So the next question fits very well in what you just said. You have practiced for many years as an architect and you are involved in many initiatives through the Fondation Mies van der Rohe and you have a large international network. So do we need more experience, more research, more interdisciplinary exchange, although with other professions, to step further?
Yes, absolutely. You learn so much when you talk with people from other disciplines or other professions. It's so much enriching because when I talk to another architect, okay, I learn, especially if this other architect is honest and humble and is sharing with me the problems they had throughout the design process and the construction process. Then I learn a lot. And then I like to see the building and learn about the detailing and how they solve this or that thing. And also to see how is it working and so. But then when I talk with a biologist or a physician in physical, I'm someone who's expert in physics, and it's telling me about how the temperature is changing inside the room, or any other thing, or someone involved in the production processes of, I don't know, some mechanism. And then I understand why things are like this and not like that. It's not my field, but it will help me a lot to design better when I understand the reasons of the other involved in the process. So obviously transdisciplinarity is key. Everyone has its role. We don't have to try to step on the other's field, but we have to know as much as we can from other fields.
By chance, I mean, all the listeners are aware of it. All of us here today are women, but that is not reflective of reality because women are still underrepresented in architecture in many countries. What needs to change, by your opinion?
I am personally very interested. I'm a super feminist and I say it clear. And I'm very interested in raising the visibility of women, not only in architecture, but in society. That's why we implemented the Lili Reich Grant for Equality in Architecture. Lili Reich was partner of Mies van der Rohe during 14 years since they were 40. So it was like a mature age couple. The legacy we had from her is she was the lover of Mies, or why did he had such an ugly woman next to him, and all these, you know, unbelievable stories that are written in the textbooks. So we created this grant and we are fully supporting the visibility of her work and her role, undeniable, in the production of the Barcelona Pavilion or the Tugendhat House or many other projects they shared as partners. What has been happening during 100 years? Well, the story is explained by men, and they tend to explain the story from their point of view. And then the second one to come is not going to the original sources, but to the written sources. And that makes a long story of denying the role of the few female architects that were able to do something, because they were. But the storytelling is forcing every new generation of women to start from zero. Like, if you are the first generation, you have to start. No visibility of any referential architects in the past. Women were not there. Well, that's a lie. And that's the first lie that we have to fight. Our grandmothers were architects. Our mothers were architects. We are architects. And we have to fight if we want our daughters and granddaughters not to be forced to start from zero. What's happening today in the profession? Well, women are there in large numbers. We might have 50% easily in many of the countries. It's only in the public sphere that they are not shown. Why is it so? Because for many years we liked the story of the lonely genius. And then if it has to be a lonely genius, it's lonely and it's one. And then if it's one, it's him. Usually women are socially educated not to be the one leading the conversation in the room. So they might be super smart and talkative and they might be able to lead the conversation, but they just prefer not to do it. Lately, having this discussion with a group of women here in Barcelona, how difficult is it to achieve 50% representation of women in the panels, even if you're willing to? And lately, we're getting to the discussion that most of the panels are really not interesting. And then you're invited, but it's not your priority to go there. You have other more interesting things to do, maybe, you know, in the office, at work, with your friends. And being there, you know, on the public sphere, it's not that interesting. And then many women are not doing it. So journalists and people who is into the dissemination should not, you know, focus that much on these superficial and banal panels, but go to the real production and see who's doing the work.
A few months ago, we had the great honor to speak with another great female architect, Benedetta Tagliabue. And she said that women have a different feminine way of designing, that they create different kinds of spaces. So we've been, for example, talking about the Maggie Center she was designing. Would you agree on this?
I would agree. And there's a different attitude towards the goals they want to serve. And they are less interested in the glory of the public sphere, less interested in the maybe beautiful picture, but very, very motivated by how useful the spaces are and how well will the users feel when they are in that space. And then that might come a different formalization or not. That I think it's very difficult to say, but the way the brain is working when it's designing the space, I think it's much more user-oriented. 100% user-oriented in most of the cases, I would say. And that's a good news for the user.
It's very nice that you use the word humble in connection with architecture, because I think we have still a lot to learn just regarding the women in architecture and looking at architecture and raising the world of architecture. So we have talked about many projects and topics, and at the end of this podcast, we have a personal question. With which contemporary high-profile individual, it could be a politician, an artist, and scientists, etc., would you like to swap your life for just one day?
That's an interesting question. Let me before tell you something that when I got into this position, and actually in any position or any role I have had to play, I always thought that if you are there, you have to use it to do whatever you think has to be done. You have to use whatever power you might have in any moment or the capacity of influencing or changing things to just do it. Okay. And if it doesn't work, it doesn't work. So this being said, I'm trying to think of women. That's funny. My brain is going very rapidly through power women who have the opportunity to change things. Of course, the president of Europe might be one word. Yeah, Ursula von der Leyen. I would like to be her for one day. It's very hard for the politicians to change things also, that has to be said. Huh?
Especially in one day.
Especially in one day. Yeah, maybe I would better become one of these men who's flying to the moon lately and try to use the money for something different and more profitable to others.
Is there any message you would like to leave for our, especially our young listeners?
To our young listeners, I would tell them to follow their inspiration and do what they think they have to do. Feel comfortable with what they are doing. And if they are not comfortable, maybe they don't have to do this. So they have to feel in peace with themselves. Of course, be ready for failing. Accept that they have to work very hard and sometimes things will not go well, but try to be happy and confident in what they are doing.
That sounds very good.
It's a great message.
Yeah. It is a hard way sometimes to go through, but usually it goes into a good direction.
If you're truly doing what you think you have to do and you work hard and you're ready for failing, then sometimes good news come. Yeah.
Ah, Anna, it was a pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for taking time. It was inspiring, very honest, and thank you so much for your open words. Greetings to Barcelona, and to say it in Spanish, adiós.
Adiós.
Adiós. Gracias. Un beso.
Ah, thank you so much. And many thanks to our listeners as well. We're looking forward to share our upcoming Jung Architecture Talks podcast with you. Tune in on jung.de/architect. We're happy to meet you over there.